parents well.
Thanks, Kevin.
Children's health.
836 News Talk Live, News Talk 105 WGEM. Craig Harley here. Last time we saw Katie Krauser was in the great outdoors, in the wilderness, in a camper. That was last week. Thanks for coming out to Bucket List last week, by the way.
Oh, that was fun. We always enjoy coming out there.
We had the big WGEM Salvation Army Bucket Blitz at the Quincy Mall all last week, broadcasting from a camper. And when the broadcast was over with, we set a campfire, roasted marshmallows, and sang Kumbaya.
And I missed that part.
And then I woke up. That would have been like a dream come true. But it's book notes, and you know, it's the holiday season, and the library still out there with stuff and books and entertainment and, you know, things to, you know, keep your mind off of, I don't know, things that are bothering you.
That's right.
And maybe, you know, move it into another dimension and learn about more things.
Well, books are a great way to escape the mundane. The best part to me about reading is finding a book that really delves into, allows me to find a new place to live, a place to be, you know, getting into my imagination and finding that place, whether it's, you know, the bottom of the ocean or the top of a mountain, just letting me find a sense of place, and I'm going to live there for a while.
And what's amazing to me, though, is the authors, they'll write about the bottom of the ocean in such detail that you actually picture it. You picture like you're there, and you know they've never been there.
But they do wonderful research.
Absolutely.
To find out.
They do.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And, you know, actually, it's funny because some of my favorite books that are science fiction, I think of things like Ender's Game, you know, by Orson Scott Card. And he described what it would be like to be in a space station, you know, finding ways to have gravity for these kids that are up there in the school for space and things like that. And a lot of the early science fiction writers, they were just making this up out of their own head. But
yeah, it's amazing. How would they know?
They
weren't scientists, really.
Not necessarily.
They had an interest in science.
Right.
But nobody had ever been there.
But it's so real. It's so real to us now. And so many things were predicted by those early science fiction writers. It's fabulous.
Do you suppose perhaps the scientists based what they did, what they developed for outer space based on the books?
Not necessarily, but I think that knowing that there was an option out there is always, you know, I'm sure that they had read some of those early science fiction writers said, you know what, you're right, I bet we could do something like that. You know, even with Star Trek, you think of the early communicators and the early, you know, things that they used in the TV show that we have since come to see.
You know, you're using all the time. You know, they always had their little communicator,
mm-hmm.
and could communicate with anybody, anywhere. And where are we at now?
Cell phones.
Absolutely. I like the old 50-year-old Star Trek, so where they show, I mean, essentially, you know, it's an MRI.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We'll do a body scan. And you know, they didn't have that in the 60s. You know, it was being developed, but it really wasn't there. And then the other thing, though, is they stored data on a disc that resembles a compact disc.
It really
in the
does.
1960s. And they had the flat screen monitors, too, on the Enterprise. So it's amazing how, you know, I'm told that they did a lot of research, though, talking
oh, yes.
to scientists, cutting-edge things to see what was on the horizon. But, boy, they were right.
They were right. And that takes us, you know, into that escapism. We use our imaginations and we see it because they write it that way. So just, you know, a good time to read books to yourself or to the children in your household. You know, always something that you can get at the library that's going to inspire you to read and enjoy and stay home when it's cold.
Yeah, and if we ever have a snowstorm and you're stuck at home, there you go.
All the better.
No sign of snowstorms coming.
I don't know. I thought I heard something about flurries later this week. We'll see.
Well, Kevin says a flurry or two.
Ah.
You can count the snowflakes.
Yeah.
May not be a white Christmas, Kevin says.
Well, if Kevin says it must be true.
Well, he says it may not be, but again, it may be.
We'll see.
But we'll see what's up. But I digress. you've got some interesting reading this week again.
Yes, always. You know, it just seems like I always find something serendipitously when I go on to our downloadable options at the library, either through the Alliance Digital Media Library or eRead Illinois or Hoopla. This particular one popped up as a recommendation. The title is The Hare with the Amber Eyes, and it was written by Edmund Duval, and I had no knowledge of this book before I started reading it.
Well, here's where I'm at. How's hare spelled?
H-A-R-E, the animal.
Is it about a rabbit?
Well, kind of.
Okay, it's not about a bug.
All right, so this is a nonfiction book. Edmund Duval, he is a known ceramicist, very popular, makes wonderful, beautiful ceramics, and he inherited a group of Japanese netsuke, which are small wood and ivory carvings that were done in the done forever, I would presume. But the collection that he has is 264 of these very small carvings, and they were passed down to him from generations of his family. He's actually the fifth generation in his family that has owned these, and he started researching them. He wanted to find out where they came from and how his family came to own so many of them. And so he went back to the beginning, and they were originally purchased in the 1800s, the mid to late 1800s, by one of his great-great uncles, Charles, who was a friend of Monet's, a friend of Renoir's, a friend of Proust's back in the 1800s in Paris. The family name, the original family name, were the Afruzis. I can't pronounce it, but they were bankers. They started off in the Ukraine. They were grain sellers, would sell things, and eventually they made their way into banking. And each of the sons was sent to a different large city in Europe. Charles happened to be sent to Paris, and he was there when the first rage for all things Japanese came about. So he collected these little carvings and had a very fancy case that they were put in. Well, eventually, of course, that fell out of fashion. So he gifted them to his nephew, who was living in Vienna at the time in the Afruzi Palace, and which is right on the Ringstrasse in Vienna. If you know anything about how Vienna is set up, it's one of the beautiful palaces that was built there. And they stayed there until World War II. And so Edmund takes us through each of those generations, you know, talks about the families, talks about what they did and how even those little mundane acts of daily life were so important. He was able to do a lot of research into the background of the family, all of the cousins and marriages and things like that that happened, but also because they were Jewish, how their lives were impacted by society and culture going on around them at that time. And the way that his uncle, Iggy, was able to get the netsuke after World War II was because they had a very loyal German maid who had smuggled them out one or two at a time from the family's mansion in her mattress, and she wanted to save them for the family after the Jews were expelled from Vienna.
Wow.
Just a fascinating story. I mean, all of the people that he knows, the things that he comes up with, and how the family was able to cope with the changes in society, and then of course World War II when they were literally removed from their home and nothing was left for them. Just a fascinating story, and so well written, so well told. This was a driveway moment. I had to sit in my car and keep listening to it because I was so entranced with the story.
Wow.
It was wonderful.
That's something.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I would strongly encourage everyone, if you have any interest in this at all, it's a great history of those Japanese pieces, but also of that time frame and the family and what they were able to do once they were expelled.
I'm just fascinated the maid saved the pieces.
Yes.
You know, like two or three at a time.
Yeah. She had worked for the family since she was a teenager, and one of the laws that went through after the Anschluss in Austria was that people Germans or Austrians who were under the age of 45 could no longer work for their Jewish the people that they had been working for who were Jewish. But she stayed because that's the only place that she had ever worked. And she saw the unrighteousness that was happening. And so she wanted to save something for them and save something for the children because she knew that they needed to have that heritage. They needed to have something left of their family after after everything had been taken away from them.
That's really nice.
Yes. Yeah. Just a beautiful story. So well done. And one of the figurines, of course, is this rabbit, the hare, that has amber eyes. And so that's
there
the one.
There you
that,
go.
It does tie back to the title. But it's really sweet because he talks about how some of these drawings or these sculptures that were done in Japan, you know, some of them were just, you know, daily life, you know, the plums in the basket or the rat crawling over the piece of cheese or whatever. But then some of them were kind of naughty and some of them were, you know, they had meaning beyond just what the drawing was.
And these were little sculptures.
Little sculptures that you could carry in your pocket, like tumbling stones, he says.
Like the size of
Quarters and
an eraser or something.
Yes, your pocket watch. You'd put it in the pocket with your pocket watch and have it with you during the day. Pick up the one that attracted you that day.
Well, if they were that small, you think the maid would be able to smuggle out more than two or three at a time.
Well, but she couldn't take very many because the Germans were occupying the house at the time, and she had to sneak them out one or two at a time.
You know, so they wouldn't notice.
Exactly.
Yeah, so by the time they notice, they're all gone.
Yes.
That's sneaky.
What a great story, though.
I like that, though.
Yes.
That's very cool. So we have our ordinary, usual activities happening at the library. Got anything for the holidays?
Not this week. This week, we're kind of taking a break to rev up for next week when we have our Holly Jolly party. But this week, we've got all our normal events. We have toddler time this morning and actually our Renaissance Readers group. If you remember the Renaissance Readers, they will be meeting this morning and having their holiday celebration, kind of a year in review, talking about the different books that they'd read and things like that. And then on Thursday, we have our preschool story time. On Friday, we are doing our Fantabulous Friday, which is always fun. That's going to be a dance party. So get those kids out and make them move, make them dance. And we encourage the adults to get up and dance, too, at the dance parties.
And how old should the kids be?
Whatever age you want to bring them.
Okay.
This is a morning event, so we know that some of the kids will still be in school. But, you know, get those little kids out there and let them run, let them dance, let them move, let them be energetic and feel the rhythm. And, you know, if you're doing it with them, it's great exercise.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, the kids will be like, come on, Mom.
And we encourage that. We want those kids to see the adults doing it, too. It's not just something for them. It's something that all ages can get involved with.
Yeah, so you're showing our classic holiday movies, too?
Oh, we are, of course. On Monday, we're showing Christmas in Connecticut at 1 o'clock and 5 o'clock.
And who's in that?
I would have to look.
Oh.
But that will be our...
Like a classic, though.
It is. It's one of the classics.
That would have, you know, I don't know, Bing Crosby or somebody.
I want to say like Cary Grant and Myrna Loy or something, but...
That could be.
I'll have to look it up. And
old black and white movie stars.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wonderful stuff. And then we'll have a play date for the younger kids at 6 o'clock on Monday. And then I'll be back to update you on all the happenings for next week on Tuesday.
And Monday's a week from Christmas. Can you believe that?
No.
I can't believe it. It's just like, where'd the year go?
I cannot imagine.
You know, and it's just the holiday time. Got all your shopping done?
No.
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 Nobody does.
Actually, I do know people that have all of their shopping done, and I applaud that. Yeah, but I personally have not had time to do that yet.
And then Christmas being on a Monday, you know what the stores are going to be like that weekend.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Crazy. Good time to stay at home and read a book.
Yes. Or, you know, download a book or just get on our website and see what other fun things you can do. You can download your magazines. You can download audiobooks or, you know, if you want to shut yourself in as of, you know, Saturday, you can download movies and music, too.
Yeah. If there's no snowstorm, pretend there is one and stay home and.
That's right.
And hang out and get away from the crowds.
Absolutely.
Of course, the good news is if there's no snowstorm, you can get food delivered. Snacks and literature. It's what it's all about. Book notes, Quincy Public Library. You got some winter hours. I know you're going to be closed on Christmas and New Year's.
Yes, we will be closed Christmas Eve and Christmas Day and New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. So make sure that you come in before that. And if you don't have a library card, make sure you get your library card so that we can make sure you get things checked out and the ability to...
Oh, we were talking about the gift, though, of a library card for maybe someone who doesn't live in the library service area. You can
absolutely.
That, they could you know, grab all the resources at Quincy Public Library.
Yes, we have our tree up in the lobby, and that is for sharing the gift of reading or sharing the love of reading. You can purchase ornaments at the circulation desk in pretty much any dollar amount that you want. But one of the things that we are encouraging our patrons to be aware of is that people who live outside the library service area can get a library card. It's called a non-resident card, but it costs them $100 a year. So if you know someone who lives outside of the library service area and you would like to gift them the ability to have that library card, you can do that at the circulation desk. And that is just a wonderful way to share that love of reading, share the ability to have the access to these resources that the library provides. And we would love to see people participating in that.
And here's the marketing guy inside me coming out. Okay, $100 a year. Sounds like a lot, but it's pennies a day.
It is. It comes out to about 27 cents a day.
And knowledge and information and entertainment and enlightenment. What's that worth?
Of course. What is that worth to you?
It's priceless stuff at the library.
Well, and we tell people, you know, for the cost of your Starbucks drink every week or your Starbucks drink every day or whatever it comes out to, you know.
Absolutely.
Find a way to justify that cost to yourself.
Absolutely. You know, and if you have somebody who would just love something like that, it'd be like a great gift that just keeps on giving all year round.
Absolutely.
And that's what happens at the library. Katie Krause joining us. You're here next week.
I will be here next week.
All right. Well, happy 2 week before Christmas. Actually, 13 days till Christmas.
Happy 13 days till Christmas.
Get ready for that. It's 8:51 News Talk 105 WGEM.